Happy Home Opener Day, everyone.
Happy Home Opener Day.
One of the best days of the year. We'll be there. Oh, it's a nightmare.
That's what you get for doing two jobs.
I'm so sad. I've honestly, this has been one of those things, you know, when it's in the future and you go, it's so far away. Mm-hmm. I'll never have to deal with that. Maybe I'll die before that happens so I don't have to suffer through watching the people at the home opener have the best time of their lives as I watch the Leafs e-bug makes getting no saves. For the love of God, this is truly, listen, I've had family members, close friends die. Mm-hmm. This is in the next tier down. Not going to this game tonight. I'm not joking. I wish I was joking. Home opener is so special to me. I have gone every single year since I've lived here. And I was thinking about it today, why it was so special and how the meaning of it has changed to me. And it used to be the closest thing that you would get to playoffs.
Yeah, true.
It used to be the playoff. You had a little bit of hope and you would go to the Rogers Center.
Mm. The energy was there.
You'd sit in there, the people we packed in, and you'd be having conversations about, well, what if this happens?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm. What could be?
Yes. And I love those conversations. I have had conversations about Kendrys Morales couldn't be as bad this year as he was last year.
Oh, no.
Yeah. How'd that one turn out? Yeah, you know what?
You know, Brandon Drury, actually, he turned out to be pretty decent, except for, but not as, you know, Brandon Drury, wild debates over him. Jaime Garcia, you can't go wrong with a one-year contract. You cannot. You cannot go wrong with it. I cannot believe the Jays made this Marlins trade. We're going to win the World Series. Like, so many incredible years, so many incredible seasons, and you'd walk around and you'd see all the fools buying merchandise day one in the line for the shop. Again, the shop is great, but if I see the line, if any line that starts to wind, I'm out. Even when I'm at an amusement park, it is such a pain. First of all, I kind of don't like amusement parks. That's the thing. I say it's about the lines, but I'm kind of a chicken when I don't like the ride. Oh, great. I'll feel sick all day. You know what's the best part about amusement parks? Funnel cake. Duh.
Oh, yeah.
Everything else is so secondary to it.
I'm a big amusement park guy, but you know what?
That's for another time.
You're too tall to ride the rides.
You can't fit Simon.
Yeah, what are you allowed on?
Simon has like three seats.
Simon doing drop zone, just dangly legs over.
It's the only time where I'm honest about my height.
Yeah, yeah, you tell them exact measurements. Yeah, no. That's how you suss out all the guys who are lying about being 5'10", 6 feet. Yeah, if you are off by an inch, you'll lose your legs. You'll have a lot of dudes chopping inches off their height all of a sudden.
I'm 5'10".
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, home opener. But it's okay, this is how it's changed, though. This is what's so great about seasons like this. And I can't believe I'm saying this, but Blue Jays fans have actually become pretty accustomed to this as of late. This is now, like, since 2015. Well, 2015, I wouldn't say that there was the expectations quite, like, entering the season, right? You know, forget that. But there were expectations to try and make the playoffs.
There's juice.
Yeah. But it's like 2016, mm-hmm. and the last 2 years, there has been expectation for the ball club. But this is one that is different. This is the one that you're going to head down to the ballpark. You've already seen the team play a bunch. Mm-hmm. You've already gotten a good look at the team. You've made some hardline positions.
On certain players?
Like me. No. But you at least feel, how could you not feel really great about this ball club unless you look at the Tampa Bay Rays record, right?
Like
I know, I'm just screwing around with that. But I'm just saying, look at the bats. The most important guys are red hot to start the season.
Yeah.
Top of the batting order, the one thing that people went, oh, well, they're going to need regression from in a positive standpoint from their top bats. If they're going to be able to get this done, what happened? They've gotten that so far. They look amazing. Matt Chapman looks like he's going to have a contract year. Mm-hmm. The batting lineup, as I was mentioning the other day, has real balance to it. There's a threat every time you go through next guy, next guy, next guy. It's a gauntlet.
Yeah, and the top of the order is raking too.
Top of the order is solid.
Mm-hmm.
And so is the top of the rotation. You feel great about that too, which you get to see tonight.
Yeah.
Pretty fun. Pretty nice for Alek Manoah that he gets the double dip.
Yeah, opening day and the home opener.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It really is. It's pretty sweet for that guy that he gets it. And you know what, though? Perfect guy for the home opener.
I was about to say, he probably loves that. He probably loves that.
The big energy player, wears the number six.
Yeah.
You know he's going to know how to respond to the crowd. Perfect guy to be there. But there is something special. I used to think that it was special being at the home opener because, like I said, it was the closest thing that we were going to get to a playoff atmosphere. Mm-hmm. That was going to be the one sellout of the year, and it was going to be the biggest game other than when the Yankees, the Red Sox came to town and bought up a bunch of tickets.
Yeah.
Now it's just the excitement of what's to come and a season where the ballpark is going to be packed night in, night out.
Yeah.
It's not going to be sellouts. It's not going to be this many people. It's not going to be nuts like tomorrow when I go for sloppy seconds.
Get your bobblehead.
I will not be getting that bobblehead. I'm going to be in the worst of both worlds tomorrow where I don't get the bobblehead because I won't be early enough for that, but I will be early enough to make sure I get in for first pitch with the line situation. So I'll be cranky.
You have to wait in a line with no reward.
Yeah, I'll be cranky when I get in, but I'm going to try to go a little early actually just because, well, I was planning on going early because I wanted to scope around the new sections before the game started.
See the new spots.
And now I'm thinking that is not, I don't think Thursday's podcast will have a lot of ballpark review.
Oh, come on. You have to go out there like the sixth inning or something like that.
It depends on the score, bro.
Okay, true.
I'm just telling you like who I am. I cannot stand lines and congestion. And so I will do a little sweep to see what the situations are.
Mm-hmm.
I have to check it out. I'm just telling you that.
A scouting mission.
if a close baseball game is on, I'm not going to be wanting to do a hunt.
A concourse tour.
Yeah, I'm not going to be going up to the 500 section and going, wow, look at all the people in there. No shot. That is going to be a JD meets people for his fourth Bud Light of the game in July.
Yeah.
When he's doing far fewer podcasts, there are far fewer things going on. I gotta have a crazy Wednesday. Like I'm gonna go to the Jays game and then I'm gonna record the Raptors play-in game. I don't care if I know the score. I'll be checking the score throughout. I'll go home and I'll rewatch that and start it from the beginning. And yeah, so I'm not gonna be able to have just the fun in the sun times that I normally want to have at a Blue Jays game. Either way, just having the hope. When you get to that season, being able to look at all the Blue Jays fans and start to project out what it's going to look like come playoff time, that part of the year, the optimism that is the first game, one of my favorite things in sports.
Mm-hmm.
Just one of my favorite things in sports is you can't talk yourself into the team the same way in basketball, right?
Yeah.
Like, you go to an NBA home opener. I don't think I've ever even done that, to be honest. I'm not sure. Yeah, maybe I have, but if I have, I can't even remember it. That's how unmemorable it was. The feeling is not the same when you start an NBA season. You know.
Yeah,
you know if you're a contender, if you're not, or what the goal of the season is supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Hockey, pretty similar. Opening, the home opener here in Toronto is not a special event.
Mm-hmm.
That's for the wealthy to lightly clap as they announce the roster. And mostly it's just a game where you go and it's, all right, let's get it going here.
Well, I went to the one this year and the energy in there was not what I would have expected from a Leafs home opener.
Yeah, no. It's not the same. I'm sure, like, our next guest who heard that is like, I actually played, and that game is special to me. But no, hockey, NHL home opener is not the same. Not here, anyways. Maybe some place, like, Montreal's is pretty special.
Right.
And I call them cornballs for it. I love doing it. I love trolling them for their stuff when they bring out their little torch. I'm like, okay.
They love their ceremonies.
Yeah.
They love their
ceremonies. Oh, my
That's
God,
for
dude.
Sure.
Montreal,
they do
just
love ceremonies.
Say all your games start at 8 o'clock. Every Saturday game, just say it starts at 8 o'clock. We get it. You're going to honor some guy.
You're retiring some other
Someone
number.
Will be honored.
Somebody's getting honored in Montreal on Saturday night. It's going down. And the home opener is the longest one with the torch. But yeah, baseball home opener, man, nothing beats it. Nothing beats being at that ballpark. Being there for the anthem, they roll out that huge Canadian flag that they do every single year. And yeah, you know that your summer is going to be populated with a really fun baseball team and that you can head down to just like a great patio, watch these games. And now all of a sudden you could actually be out of there in 2.5 hours instead of rot in your seats.
Yeah, that's
nice. You can actually have a night.
Oh, man, it's huge. It's absolutely massive. Anyway, Curtis McElhinney, former Leafs goalie, 2-time Stanley Cup champion and host of the Walls Within podcast. Good morning, brother. How we doing?
Doing pretty well, thanks. Thanks for having me.
You a Jays fan?
No, I don't follow any baseball, unfortunately.
No baseball, eh? Like, I was like, we got to take a shot. A lot of hockey guys love them some baseball. Today's the Blue Jays home opener. So, yeah, we're catching it this day. Okay.
I will say, I was at those World Series back in the day. So
you were there as a kid?
I jumped on the bandwagon for a little bit. I was there as a kid. Yeah, I grew up in London, Ontario.
Yeah, yeah.
Old man was involved with some sports bars, so we got some tickets and went to those games. And I just remember people climbing the streetlights outside and ripping off all the banners that were hanging up there.
Yeah, that's nice. That's what you got to do. Is just become a hooligan immediately upon winning. It's like, okay, what am I gonna steal? Wake up tomorrow and see in my house that I know I won't be able to use for anything if I'm a half serious person. Like that's basically what that turns into. That's fun though. I don't hate on that. Like you gotta celebrate the way that you want to celebrate. Just maybe try to limit the property damage a little. So. Man, a lot of guys struggle with the post-career pivot. You seem to be doing just fine. You've got a ton on the go. You're working with goalies. You're doing this podcast. So, yeah, what made you want to host this Walls Within thing? Because it looks very cool. Is you and a pilot?
Yeah, it was great. So this gentleman who's an F-35 pilot, Dave Palillo, he's coming up on retirement here, started reaching out to me. And normally I'm a little wary of anyone that reaches out to me on Instagram just due to my performances in games. But now that I'm retired, people have been pretty civilized. So that is kind of nice. And so Dave and I just had a lot of common threads that we hit on and things that we've experienced in our careers, which is very interesting to me. So we started riffing on a few topics and it's just kind of took on a life of its own. And it's been, for me, honestly, very therapeutic to chat with somebody else who's had similar experiences. And now we're just kind of trying to expand it into the interview side of things and hear some other stories from different walks of life.
I love that the stress level that you're saying of being a goaltender in the NHL is like flying a fighter jet. Like, hey, listen, we're here together, brothers in arms. I played in Toronto. I had to open up those Instagram DMs and see what was waiting for me every day. That said, people loved you here, man. People still like you here. I can't imagine that you took much heat from Toronto fans, right?
No, yeah, that was a fantastic place. And it was almost one of those things that maybe I left when I was riding on top there. Obviously, things have gone very well for me playing behind Freddie Anderson at that time. So I think it was a tremendous experience and something that I look back on very fondly. But, yeah, thankfully I was not the punching bag for fans or the media at that point, which was terrific.
No, dude, it was the opposite. Because basically the way it was when you came in, Freddie Anderson hadn't had a serious backup goaltender during his Toronto Maple Leafs tenure. It was a real problem, and Toronto couldn't get guys playing on back-to-backs. It was a huge conversation here. Like, which day do you play Freddie Anderson and which day do you punt was essentially the way that we talked about it. And, man, he was playing so many games, and even when he left town, a lot of the discussion of people that were kind of more defensive of Freddie Anderson's Toronto Maple Leaf legacy, it was, well, they kind of ran him into the ground the first couple of seasons, and you came in here, and you really stabilized the net. And, yeah, you came from Columbus, and I think expectations, no offense, were a little lower from Leaf fans. They went, hey, like, what's this guy going to do here? How different is this going to be? And you were the most solid backup that they had up until Jack Campbell ended up here, who, yeah, ended up not really being a backup. And so I wonder, how did it feel when you left? Because, yeah, they decided to go with a younger, cheaper player, but it wasn't cheaper to the point where it was just, like, cap crippling for this team. And, yeah, you had sort of proven yourself. You mentioned it. You're a London guy. You'd played really well here. You seem to have settled in well. Like, I would imagine that it was kind of tough.
Oh, I was so bitter. I was so bitter. I mean, I loved it there. First time that I really had kind of found a home and felt like I'd had this or found the success that I'd been looking for a lot in my career. So it seemed like it was a perfect fit. And, you know, it is funny how things work out. Obviously, I got the run in Carolina and then wrapped up in Tampa. So, I mean, it all came together, but it was certainly a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah.
In that place.
Yeah. I mean, you end up winning cups, like you end up being in Tampa. And so ultimately, that's great. I will just say, I'm guessing, you know, I saw you tweet the other day, something along the lines of play well enough that they can't cut you or they can't walk away with you, something along those lines. And I feel like that's got to be the toughest thing as a competitor in the modern NHL with the hard cap is when you play the way you did and you have success and then somebody comes in behind you and does not earn the job, does not steal your job. He's just cheaper than you.
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic in professional sports in that regard. And it's just one of those things where, you know, you have to accept some things that don't really add up in your mind. But the reality of it is that's just the way it works. And obviously the Sparks, who was coming in to replace me, had been a draft pick. It had loads of success down in the minor leagues. And so I think anytime you draft a player and they have success, you need to give them the opportunity. And unfortunately, I was the odd man out of that situation. And, you know, that's, in all fairness to them, I was picked up off the scrap pile. So reality, I don't really think the expectations were that long for me or that high for me at the time, but it obviously worked out very well in the short period that I was there. And, you know, you need to kind of make way for the next wave of kids coming up. And, you know, I don't really think it panned out, obviously, afterwards, but, you know, I think this year Toronto's kind of been fun to watch in terms of their goaltending situation. It kind of seems like it's been back and forth. And then obviously with Sammy kind of taking off here as of late and grabbing the reins with Murray being out, it's been very interesting to watch.
Obviously you weren't rooting against Garrett Sparks publicly. Let's just say that. Let's just say publicly, we can all agree that you never rooted against him once, because you're a great guy and you wouldn't do such a thing. But going on and winning in the division and having further success. And then, yeah, here's the number one Garrett Sparks memory in Toronto is, I think he let in 6 goals against Chicago. And then he stood up in front of entire media and said, I thought I did great tonight, which was interesting. And I don't think the Leafs coaching staff agreed. And then from there, I don't think there were too many memorable moments. Anyway, again, completely irrelevant piece of information for you. Good guy who obviously never rooted against him or took zero pleasure in the fact that Toronto did not hit on that move. Okay, so yeah, let's talk about that goaltending situation here in Toronto. What do you think of Samsonov? Because yeah, the guy's playing a bunch lately. He's really turning it up. Fans are terrified here of him playing hockey games, which I find kind of surprising because he's still only at the 43 game mark. Would you be worried at all, like the way that he's kind of had to ramp up his workload down the stretch run here? Or do you say when a guy is hot like that, you want to see him play a little more?
I think he's the guy that we've all been waiting for to kind of take the number one reins. I mean, he was slated to do that in Washington a few years back, and then obviously had that bizarre injury where he wasn't capable of playing in the bubble. So, you know, maybe now he's at that point where he's kind of reached that maturity level where he can handle this workload. And, you know, if you turn around and look what's behind them at the current moment, it's not the most encouraging thing right now, obviously. So I think having him grab the reins, take hold of it is probably the best thing for the team and best thing for him. I mean, they need someone to stabilize it. And he certainly did that last night in Florida watching that game. He was fantastic.
Oh, he was incredible. But yeah, I'm got to be guessing a little. There's a small part of him after last night where he's saying, all right, I know I'm dialed in. I know I'm getting these games before the playoffs, but maybe don't give up 47 shots in the third last meaningless game of the year. Please don't do that.
Yeah. I mean, we know Florida's a desperate team right now, trying to make sure they're in, but obviously that's not the workload that he wants to see. And he's still got 2 challenging games, and I don't know what the decision is for tonight going into Tampa.
Not him.
Or what's going on with the cap situation.
What are you doing?
Absolutely not. Unless it's for 70 seconds. I think I could handle that.
Yeah. I think you'd do better than the Owen Sound Attack backup goalie who has an 860 save in the OHL. But okay, but sorry, go on.
Yeah, 2 tough games. So, you know, they certainly get to play meaningful games down the stretch, even though it doesn't have any bearing on where they finish in the standings. So, but I'm not sure what their plan is with them.
Do you
know, I'm sure everybody's holding their breath that he doesn't get hurt. They can just get him there so he's healthy.
Do you think that we overdo it now, though, with the sports science stuff, like when it comes to the amount of games guys need to play?
Yeah, it's a tricky question because on the other end of the ice tonight, you've got a freak of nature who would probably try and play every single game if he could. Mm-hmm. You know, it's I think there is something to it. The game is drastically different than it was when I broke into the league. And, you know, some teams were seeing 20, 25 shots a night. The workload is just dramatically different. The speed of the game and the demand on the mental side of the goaltender to perform at such a high level for an extended period is drastically different. So I think there is something to it. I mean, it's far above anything that I can comprehend. So I'll just leave it to the loads of employees that I'm sure the Leafs have managing that kind of stuff.
You know, though, I often think about or have thought about with the Leafs goaltenders is I'm sure their dynamic was great throughout the year. And for Samsonov, because of Murray's injuries, and then when he came back the second time especially and struggled, he probably felt as though the net was his for a really long time. But yeah, I do wonder when you have a split like that and guys are so competitive at this position, like you've made the NHL, you are a hardcore competitive player, you obviously want to play in games. What the mental toll of that is beyond just having to play the 40 plus games?
Yeah, I think it's different when you've got two guys competing against each other. And, you know, in some situations it's you have an off night, well, they kick it to the other guy. And then there's the flip side of that where you are the guy and you know you're playing every night because they can't turn around and put the other guy in the net. So I think there's stressful situations to both scenarios. I think if anything, I think Sammy's coming up on an opportunity where he'll really get to prove himself and be the guy. And I think Toronto will probably roll him throughout. I don't know what Murray's status is at this moment, but I would like to see them kind of stick with him and go down or go all the way with him.
Yeah, it used to feel like pretty much it was a lock that you would see both guys if the Leafs went on an extended playoff run. And I think the way that Samsonov's played down the stretch, that it's really hard to envision that scenario, even if Matt Murray is able to get healthy. I just think he's done enough this year to earn that spot, to solidify that spot, and that they're not going to be able to turn to Matt if he comes back off the shelf and say, hey, we're gonna put these playoff games in your hands. I have a really, really tough time seeing it. Okay, so you mentioned Vasilevsky, the freak of nature on the other side. Like, we see the numbers and we see the size and the ability, but being up close with him, backing him up for a couple of years, what makes him so special?
I mean, it's a physical thing, but it's also the mental side of it, clearly. To have the ability to have played the amount of games, the fact that I went two playoff runs and didn't see a single minute of action is just bizarre. And then we factor in those handful of extra games in the bubble as well, where he just said, no, I'm not coming out of the net. So just the competitor, I don't know if it's a Russian thing in regards to they just want to be in the net and they won't allow anyone else to set foot in it and give them an opportunity. I think that's probably the most impressive part. Obviously, the physical side of it, too, is incredible to watch. And so I always love any time two countrymen play against each other. And I think this series, the way it's lining up, should be fantastic. And if there's a better time to knock off Tampa right now and have the Leafs move on to the second round, I don't think there's a better year to do it than right now.
Yeah, Tampa in the last 2 months is 12-17. And last year when they slowed down, people were mentioning that they were a little tired and the runs had kind of taken their toll on them. And that's what we were seeing show up. And then they got into the postseason and completely flipped the switch. Do you think they do that again, or is this a little bit different than a year ago?
I think it's a little bit different, but I certainly wouldn't count them out. It's just, you know, every year in and year out, you end up, when you win, you got to pay guys for the success that you've had. You know, it's the bizarre nature of sports in that regard, is that you have success and everybody gets paid afterwards. And, you know, then you start having to plug your holes and try and go on a run and do it with new personnel in the lineup as some guys move on. So they're kind of beat up right now. I mean, I just saw they lost Jeannot for a little bit. He certainly won't be starting the playoffs. So It'll be interesting to see what the middle of their lineup can do in terms of support for those top players. But yeah, it's a tricky situation right now for Tampa. There's certainly a lot of miles in the last handful of years on that team. So do they have a little bit of magic left, or is Toronto going to be the team that finally gets past that first round and overcomes that hump?
It's frustrating, I think, a lot for Leaf fans, because they're looking at it and saying, man, Toronto has played so well and the team is really well balanced and they've pushed a lot of chips into the postseason and Samsonov's playing well. But then you just mentioned the Vasilevsky thing, and it's just like, yeah, right. You cannot have the advantage in net. It's just not going to happen for you. You have to beat that guy four times. It is a daunting proposition. And so, yeah, I think their team is probably going to be more game for the playoffs than they have been down the regular season stretch. I'm sure that as professionals, once you know you're locked into a series, especially these guys, like all of them, I don't know how much you keep in touch with some of your former teammates, but it's got to be a little strange knowing your playoff matchup is essentially sealed in what, January? Like, it's been it's been the entire year where these two teams have known that this was going to be a rematch.
Yeah, it's honestly, it's terrible to as a player because you're sitting there thinking it's like you're not moving up or down in that lineup. The only question mark is whether you're home or away. And, you know, I really don't think that has any bearing on the outcome of the series, but it's a little frustrating. I think it makes it hard to kind of get up for some of those games when you're hitting game 60 and, you know, you still got 22 games left in the series right now. But things are getting pretty real. Tampa obviously just got thumped on this most recent road trip that they took. So they've got some question marks and things that they want to get straightened out. I think tonight should be an interesting matchup. I don't know if it's going to be one of those games where it's a tone-setting game or they just want to come out and get through it. You know, I'm not sure. I think Tampa wraps up with Detroit to finish their season, and then the Leafs have the Rangers. So the Leafs have kind of got two pretty solid challenges, which will be fun to watch. And then Tampa, it'll be, I don't know, is this a tone-setting game or is it not? Is it just one of those things that, hey, we just want to get through healthy and then we're going to try and punch someone in the mouth in game one?
Yeah, see, that's why I thought if I was Sheldon Keefe, I'd be cautious about which players I put in tonight. I'd be like, this is a total punt game. Where do you believe in showing your hand in hockey? Like, because you do that in other sports, but it's not really the same in the NHL, or at least it doesn't feel that way. Like, you're about to play them in a real battle in a week from now. Is there something, is there any part of a team that goes, hey, no, like, we don't want to reveal anything to you? Like, that's why I wouldn't even have thought to put Samsonov in net, is you don't even just get a look at this guy.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know what the right answer with it is. I know I always felt when you took a step back and kind of relaxed, you lost your edge a little bit. So, but at the same point, it's like, hey, we don't need any injuries starting this series next week. So you've come this far at the point, you just kind of keep pushing and putting your best foot out there, or you take that step off and then know that you can turn that switch on. I guess that comes down to the leadership group of the players and also the coaching staff, is that if you can allow them to get through these next couple games without any injuries and then flip that switch and be ready to go next week.
Yeah. I think it's one thing if you're Tampa and you have Stanley Cups and appearances and deep playoff runs and you have a deep confidence in who you are and the core pieces of your roster being able to perform this time of year or get over the hump or know what it takes to go on that deep run. I think it is different for the Leafs where, resting on your laurels a bit too much and resting and taking games for granted down the stretch and not trying to be your best self. Maybe, like, it's not that they haven't, like, earned that right. That's the only way that I can say this, though. But as an outsider, you go, I think you open yourself up to a different level of criticism if you take your foot off the gas and then you enter the playoffs and then you're not able to hit that gear.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Tampa has that luxury of having been there, done that, an understanding of what it takes. And, you know, Toronto's sitting with a team that has urgency and is looking to make that push to get beyond that first round. And, you know, they've been knocking on the door. It was darn close last year, you know, and then the problem being is you ran into Vasilevsky and all the incredible things that he can do. So there certainly has to be an urgency from the Leafs, and I don't know if it's a time to step back and relax and gear up next week, or you just, hey, let's go punch this team in the mouth right now and let them know that we're coming.
So the Leafs get their ticket punched to the postseason. The year you get there for the first time, this group, because of that save you made on Sidney Crosby, which that's gotta be a top five. That's gotta be some kind of big memory for you, right? Like, knowing you were in net for this massive game, you made this huge save against the game's best player, and you put in, the biggest franchise in hockey, the province that you grew up in, you made that save that put them there, and I it's hard to say started this run for them, because there's been no run, but this streak of playoffs, like, you started, this era, you had a huge hand in helping them get to their first playoff series.
Yeah, I mean, certainly a highlight. People remind me about it all the time.
Yeah.
You know, the irony of it was is that I was a Penguins fan growing up, too.
You know,
they were winning their cups when I was 7, 8 years old. So that was my team. I jumped on the bandwagon with Mario. And, you know, I loved everything about Pittsburgh. So, certainly a highlight moment. And know, I guess it's just one of those things now where it's like, all right, and I'm sure I'm with every Leaf fan in that regard, is that, all right, guys, this is his year. This is the year, you know, let's just get past that first round and then all bets are off.
You subscribe to that theory then, that these guys are carrying a lot of weight on their shoulders and that if they can just pass Tampa, it's going to free them up?
Well, I think it was a lot like that for Tampa in regards to getting past Columbus. Obviously, Toronto's a whole different market in regards to what you have to deal with. And, you know, I'm sure they've been fielding questions and about Tampa for a number of months so far, and also the whole first round thing for quite some time. So a whole different beast in that regard.
What would you have told me if I said, hey, I hopped in the time machine, I show up in 2017 and I go, so I'm from the year 2023 and the Leafs still haven't gotten out of the first round?
You know, I want to give those young guys some slack, a little bit of credit, and say, hey, they're only 25, right?
Yeah.
Those top players coming up, all those guys. So they're entering that prime now where you start contending, you know, you start going to conference finals consistently, and you're doing that for the better part of a decade, wherever those contracts may end up. But the bottom line is 25, you've been in the league for a handful of years. They've had loads of success, individual and team-wise. And now it's a matter of getting a group over the hump.
Curtis, that save, that game against your beloved Penguins that you killed, like you just crushed young you's heart. There was some young you out there in Pittsburgh. Watch, actually, probably my buddy Colby Armstrong's kid, Cruz, who loves the Penguins. He was watching that game, and you just shattered his dreams. And you did it. You did that thing, and it was great. I was in a sports bar, and there was a lot of spillage during that game. There was a lot of just beer on the floor. Great to chat with you, man. Congrats on all your success post-career. And, yeah, enjoy the playoff run, man.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Take care, dude. Curtis McElhinney, former Leafs goaltender, two-time Stanley Cup champion with, bad guys, and host of the Walls Within podcast, which you can get on Apple or on Spotify. That is the one super positive feeling I do have about the Leafs. I think there is like an opportunity cost, but also, okay, this Leafs team, they came in, and this is a byproduct of the market. There's so much hype right away, Oh my God, they got to get this thing done. You got to get it done on rookie contracts. Boy, if they get out of the rookie contracts, they're going to be doomed.
Mm-hmm.
They don't get anything done with the guys on the rookie deals. And all of a sudden, everybody gets paid massive contracts, record-breaking contracts for RFAs.
Yep.
It completely changes the way that people perceive the team. And they line up with the Bruins and the Lightning in their division as those two teams are very much in their peak of their powers, where their guys are in their prime. And, yeah, Toronto's had some total biffs. Like, it hasn't just been that, okay? Like, it hasn't just been that. But when it comes to, hey, why hasn't this group ever won a President's Trophy or won a division? That is a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of the North year where it was the most embarrassing thing
that
ever happened. Like I said, I think it's the lowest moment in the franchise's history.
I agree.
It's so embarrassing still to this day.
Yeah.
I've had 2 days in a row with tweets in the drafts to make fun of Habs fans. And both days I had to just
holster them.
Yep, holster and lower my head.
Yeah, no.
In shame.
Any Habs fan I know, I haven't said a word to them.
Oh yeah, you can.
In the last 2 years,
you will.
Haven't said a word
until they beat them in a playoff series.
I can't say anything.
Or until Toronto wins a cup.
Yeah,
those are the only two things.
You have to not look Habs fans in the eyes when they pass you in the street.
Just look down.
Yeah,
look,
they are the upper class, and we are the peasants who cannot look up. Because
it's like
they can beat you in public.
Yeah, no, they can.
Just with their words.
They have the license.
Remember North Division? And you're like,
Well, what happened in 2020?
I know, bad.
No!
So that one in Columbus, obviously the worst two. They're just inexcusable chokes. That's where you look at this group and say, hey, what's the DNA of them? What's the ability of them when it's crunch time? And Marner putting pucks over the glass and him and Matthews not being able to produce on a major stage. Like that is what you can point to and say, here you go. This is conclusive evidence that these guys are just not built for this life or that they weren't at this time.
Mm-hmm.
What I think does get lost a little bit in the whole conversation is this is a frantic, manic, fearful, hateful fan base at times. And no one wants the over-optimist, right? Like, that is just the worst, too, right? Like, our boy Pete, where he's
I knew
just,
you were going to say Pete.
Well, it's just true. Where like, they're not even basing anything in reason. Like, they change the goalposts on what matters to them. Like, Pete genuinely said this year, if the Leafs lose in the first round, it can still be a success. Like, that is what he said to me when he first got this job, and that was the day I knew he would not keep his job.
Yeah.
No. Like that was when I knew. But anyway, it's still very likely the Leafs will re-sign all these guys, in my opinion.
Yeah.
If they lose in the first round this year and they do it in really poor, ugly fashion, I could see a pivot. I could see them moving off of Nylander as he's entering a contract year and them saying, hey, you know what? We're going to turn this guy into different assets. We're going to build the team a little bit differently. We're going to make some adjustments with this team. I think that would be on the table.
Right.
But still, what I think is going to be very likely is that as the salary cap rises, they're going to continue this model of try to bring back as much talent as possible. And you are going to go into those guys' prime years.
Yeah.
The ages in which the Tampa Bay Lightning stars, a bunch of them, beat those young Leafs players.
Mm-hmm.
The ages that the Bruins players were. Even a little bit younger, to be honest, than when they lined up against the Leafs for some of these series. And have these guys in the second year of their prime. I know that athletes peak at different points in their careers now, right? It's why I have a tough time when people say things like, well, the Leafs were so young. You go 23 and 24 years old in professional sports when you've been playing since you were 19.
Isn't young anymore.
It's not that young.
Yeah, you're...
Like, you should be entering your prime,
at least.
You're
a young adult, okay? It's like, yeah, if you... You're no longer, I'm trying to make a juvie reference here. Like, if you go to jail, you're going to adult prison.
You're going to jail.
Like, you're going to jail if you do. You're in the real world, you're 22 years old, you're 23 years old. You go, hey, everyone makes mistakes when they're young. You go, yep, you definitely do, but now this goes on your permanent record.
It's the first thing I was told when I turned 18. You can go to jail now. Yeah. Thanks.
That was the first thing you were told?
Yeah, my happy birthday.
You woke up.
I'm not kidding. It was the first thing my grandma said to me on my birthday.
Yeah, your grandma. One person, yeah.
Let's go.
I just pictured her waking you up.
Oh, okay. It wasn't that dramatic. Like, it wasn't that dramatic.
You can keep this going right now. You can go to prison right now.
Joe,
wake up. The Fed.
Yeah.
You can go to jail.
Joe, wake up. It's time for prison.
Your cuffs are here.
It's time for prison, Joe. Get up.
They shit me off.
Yeah. Anyway, I just... These guys are going to very likely be here for their primes as Tampa and Boston age out. And yes, does Buffalo look scary? For sure.
Yep.
Does Detroit have the best general manager in hockey? Yep.
Mm-hmm.
No question. No question.
No arguments.
I saw the people kind of give me eyeballs back there. It's like, no question is the answer to that. Do the Senators have some pluckiness to them and some fun players? Like, yeah.
There could be some juice there.
All these teams have stuff. None of them are on the level of what the Leafs are right now. If the Leafs played those teams in seven-game series, it might be a sweep. It'd be five games, four games, something along those lines, for real. Unless something insane happened where one of them got an extremely hot goalie or the Leafs had a collapse. Like, that's what it would have to be. It would feel the exact same way as the Toronto-Montreal series where it was a monster collapse for those teams.
Yeah.
Toronto, I don't want to say this year's gravy for them, because obviously it's not. They've never been out of the first round.
Yeah.
But there is a part of me that looks at this and goes, hey, this is almost like your bonus year. You're going to run into this stacked Boston team, but what is the division going to look like next season? What is it going to look like as Vasilevsky starts to enter his 30s? He's 28 right now?
28, yep.
Yeah.
Be 29 next year.
The team is getting a little bit older. They've been more expensive. They slowed down year over year. They've put a ton of miles on the tires, right?
Yeah. Well, their numbers down the stretch here have not been
like I said. They're 12-17 in the last 2 months, exactly.
Yeah, like all the numbers too. Like winning percentage.
Oh yeah,
like their goal. Like
well, yeah, that's how that works. Joe. It's 12-17. The winning percentage is.
Well, I was going down like the goals they've allowed, their penalty kill. Like it's all average at best.
You could go to prison if you keep this up.
Thanks, man.
All right, I want to give a quick thought on Matthew Nyes from yesterday, but I'm going to do it on the other side of the break. All right, that I didn't do yesterday on Leafs Talk. Subscribe and review. We're going to do more bonus podcast stuff today. So subscribe to this podcast if you're listening on the radio right now or you're live streaming it or you're doing one of those things. Because again, podcast is my favorite part of the show right now.
It's pretty fun.
It's really fun. Doing a lot of good stuff on the podcast. And yeah, thanks to Curtis McElhaney. But yeah, more podcasts and then a thought on Nyes plus my best bet on Betano today. That's next.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, a couple things. Number one, if you're going to the Jays home opener tonight, go down early. Mm-hmm. It's a madhouse, and when you're watching the game, you're dialed in, and you get all the people that are showing up in the third inning, fourth inning. And you don't want to be that person anyway. Like, you want to be there for first pitch. You want to be able to enjoy the flag and, the anthem. If you can, I would suggest going, giving yourself a little bit of extra buffer time if this is your first one.
Get a bobblehead.
Which it would be for Simon, the war criminal of our show, who has not been to a single home opener. Like,
no, I've never been. It's a terrible,
Dude, you're
admission.
One of those guys that works here and who likes sports and always has smart thoughts on sports. But then I go, are you even a sports fan? You never talk about it. Dick, you're always informed on all these things. And then I go, have you ever been to this? And no, I don't go to the games. I don't watch.
He's
don't
just a sports fan for business purposes.
Teams. I know. He's like, I kind of like the Yankees. That's his move.
Used to, as a kid.
I'm an occasional Jets fan.
Yeah.
Married into a Manitoba fan. These all have reasons, you know?
They're poor ones.
Well, marriage isn't that poor of a reason.
Yeah, they're not. I don't know. Depends who you ask. Anyway, it was great getting to talk to Curtis McElhinney today. I like that I think he said the truth, though, which is that Tampa team, they can obviously flip the switch. Vasilevsky can obviously steal a series.
Yep.
But I think it's a huge disappointment if Toronto doesn't win that series against Tampa at this point. Mm-hmm. Like, this isn't a coin toss series anymore. Like, last year was a coin toss series, right? Went down to game seven. Leafs had two chances to close. They really should have. Yeah, that's, for sure. You know,
yeah.
Well, two coin tosses
in a row.
They
don't really do well with those games.
Yeah, no, they don't. They really don't.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think that this year they can't put themselves in an opportunity for Tampa where there's a game seven.
I
think they gotta end this before it even gets there.
Yeah.
And that they have a team where they absolutely should. The question is the kid that we saw last night going to be a part of that? Yesterday on Leafs Talk, we got into it. Sam Bourne and I, we did three-man Leafs Talk.
Three-man weave.
Yeah,
three-man weave.
Old Jobo always watches. Simon doesn't watch, but that's okay. Again, who knows what he's doing? Barely involved in our group chat half the time.
I only watch so I can see my graphics.
I'm going to pick the group chat up. You'll be shocked.
This is a false
jet lag in his defense.
Jet lag. Thank you.
Why didn't you say that?
I've been home for like a week.
Austin's like the one. Austin, like,
I appreciate the
he's
support,
like in the
Austin. Thank you.
Sometimes
I got you, bro.
It's hard to be me. It really is. It's harder to be me than people realize. With what's around me. You are your environment, you know?
Yeah, and you got to deal with us.
You are your environment. Anyway, I took the position that I liked what I saw from Nice last night. And you can go listen to Leafs Talk if you want the full review. McKee, Bourne, a little lower. It was actually kind of funny. It was, I think the, it was basically, one was not really a Nice fan, and Sam thought he would never play in the playoffs. Bourne thought he'd be there at some point in the run. I questioned, I don't think
Bourne
he'd be
said 100% unless it's a sweep.
Yeah, and I said, I don't think he started game one, but I think he'll get in there too. And I was very impressed with a couple of things from his game. But I want to play what Sheldon Keefe had to say last night, because I actually thought it was pretty revelatory. These are some broken up clips. These are three things that we mashed together. But we didn't take it out of context, okay? Like, we didn't do like a deep fake of Sheldon Keefe here, all right? This is just...
The J deep fake.
This is just clipping it for the sake of brevity. You'll get the drift. Play it.
I thought you did a good job. I thought the pace didn't faze him at all. His feet were moving. He made some smart plays with the puck. You know, there's a couple of mistakes out there, but I think some mistakes are good because you can learn through that and adjust your game, which I thought he did. So I thought he did a nice job. Listen, hasn't been easy for him, you know, in terms of what he's been through, not just in the devastating loss that they had for such a long season, but just the turnaround to get here and his day-to-day. I don't know how much he enlightens you have to do. It's not, you can't just show up and play in the NHL. There's a lot of hoops to jump through and clear in terms of the medical process that normally is done in training camp. But he had to go through all that sort of stuff today, and he had to travel a good distance to get it done as well. So not an easy day for him, both today and yesterday.
Okay, so you can't just show up and play in the NHL. There's a lot to do. No. But he meant it through the standpoint of you can't just arrive and they put you in. There's things that need to get done.
Yeah.
This guy just came off a deep run, where he was one of the most critical players on arguably the most talented team in college hockey.
Mm-hmm. The best line in college hockey.
Goes to the Frozen Four. Goes to overtime. Granted, it was over immediately, so it's not like he had to play extra time. It was just done.
Yeah.
Which is kind of one of the most devastating ways to lose, where you don't even get a chance. It's just like, hey, the game's done. And you go, no. You know, that's the worst feeling you can have in sports is when you sit there and you go, something must be wrong.
Yeah, there's got to be something I can do.
Somebody's going to come out here and be like, no, just kidding.
Well, Minnesota
rule violation that you just found out about is now, and it's, you know. But that travel, that schedule, those hoops, and then I looked at Nyes, and did you see him post-game presser? Mm-hmm. Cool, calm, collected.
Yep.
Mature. Carries himself well. Shows up in that game. Plays well. Made a couple of really, really nice plays where he uses the body and he created for others in the offensive end. He's got very nice hands and he made some mistakes. And definitely did he try to force some plays? 100% he did. He was also playing in his very first game against a desperate Panthers team where the rest of his teammates weren't really up for it because they've gone, hey, buddy, we've been here all year. We've been here for 79 of these games. We know who we are and what we're doing. He showed up with that, like, young, hungry college energy. And then it dissipated a little bit as the game went on. But all I could think is all of those circumstances, all of those things involved that he had to do, the travel, the catch up with the team, the way trying to ingratiate himself a little bit with his teammates, even though he's met a bunch of these guys before, have to handle the media obligations, play against the Panthers, travel, deal with his lot, saying goodbye to his teammates, all those things. And he showed up and he didn't look out of place.
Yeah.
Boy, that's a first impression.
All in under 2 days, too.
That's not Matt Stajan's first game as a Leaf. That's not Austin Matthews' first game as a Leaf, right? But that one was memorable to me. And I think some people aren't giving enough credit given those circumstances and what we saw. And tonight, it's not going to be a lot easier. Like, he played only 13 minutes yesterday and they were pretty sheltered minutes. But that's a lot, dude. Can you imagine, okay, like Simon, you just traveled, and I know that these guys are way more used to just travel life in general, but, and he's young and, you know, in incredible shape, all this different stuff. But when you finish a day where a lot of things happen, your phone's blowing up like that, you're responding, you know how that can take its toll on you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know the mental exhaustion that can come with how he's had to deal with, again, all of those factors that Sheldon Keefe mentioned. A lot of people are handling some of that stuff where he's talking about, like, the hoops he had to jump through. It's like, yeah, he's not, don't worry. Pretty sure that he's not going, like, so how do I get in to fit under the cap? Like, he's drawn up his own contract.
He's doing his own medical and stuff like that.
But, man, you put a lot on your plate in a day, and then you show up and you play your first pro hockey game, and then, yeah.
Yeah, against a hungry team.
Yeah, and I'm just saying, and you hold yourself to a solid standard where you make a couple of noteworthy plays, I think that's pretty damn impressive. He plays with size, and this is why, to me, you're starting your game conservatively against the Tampa Bay Lightning, in my opinion. I think that you're going to go with the guys who got you here and the team that you have in front of you and the 12 forwards that they've iced pretty consistently when they've been fully healthy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Nyes is getting in. And I think that if they're going to win a Stanley Cup, he might have some Chris Kreider in the playoff moments. He might have to jump in and contribute for them because he can do some things that some of their other bottom six guys just flat out will not be able to. All right, it's time for Best Bets brought to you by Betano. God, I love our friends at Betano. 2022 Global Sports Betting Operator of the Year. I've said it before. If you're interested, you've never played it before, reach out to me. You can hit me up anytime. Any questions, at JD Bunkus on Twitter and Instagram. I leave the DMs open. I actually had an incredible day yesterday. Which pick did I give out? I think I gave out first five under in the Seattle Mariners game, right? Which hit?
The Logan Gilbert one.
Yes.
Logan Gilbert, yes, sir.
No, well, it wasn't Logan Gilbert. That was my trick picking the Mariners money line. I'm saying I picked Luis Castillo because he was pitching for them to go under the runs, which hit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I had that bet that hit yesterday. I'm pretty sure that's the one I gave out because I had a ton. I had Paul Goldschmidt go over on total bases. I had the under in the Minnesota Twins game, which was razor thin. It was 7.5 and it finished at 7 runs, and it was like one of those games.
A little bit of sweat.
You held on all the way. Yesterday was nice. Today, I have to fade the Leafs. I have to do it. I know that this is like, who knows what's going to end up happening here with the goaltending situation, but as of right now, you can get the Tampa Bay Lightning at minus one. What is it right now?
139.
What? Oh, so it's moving. So the line's moving. I bought it at 128 earlier today.
Yeah.
But minus 139 for the team that might play Vasilevsky versus the team that might play Joe. I got to do it.
I'm okay with that.
I absolutely got to do it. All right. That was Best Bets brought to you by Betano Sportsbook. The game starts now. We're going to take a little bit more over to the podcast, including what the hell are the Raptors doing for hanging out? That's next.
Louis Kern.
All right. Welcome to the podcast portion of the show. We've been talking about what we're going to do on the podcast portion of the show for way too long. So let's just talk about it.
Let's
on
just go into the podcast.
Mike's. I thought Austin was giving me direction 2 seconds ago where he said, all right, go. And he actually said, you can go. But I think I was just triggered because Austin and I have bad blood today.
It's a rivalry.
No, don't ever say Austin and I are a rivalry.
It's not a rivalry if it's utter domination.
Yeah.
Well, what's the one in Embiid quote? It's not a rivalry. They always kick our ass.
Yeah. Yeah. That, I mean,
I don't know. All I know is that Austin is my friend. Okay. We are buddies. Get along great. But yesterday he didn't mic up McKee on the podcast, and I started getting all these tweets and DMs about it. Always reach out, by the way, like I said.
Or don't.
No, I always...
You don't have to. No one asked you to. I mean, if you don't reach out, it's not a big deal.
Anyway, I'm obviously not a psychopath listening to my own podcast back in the second hour of it. So yeah, I missed that McKee wasn't mic'd up, and we're in the same room as him. So I can hear him just fine. But, you know, the guy in charge of the sound should probably do it better than the way you did, which was not miking him up. Thank God it wasn't too long. And McKee was like, I got to run, and didn't do that whole segment in here, which he was almost going to. So anyways, would you like to apologize to me and the listeners, Austin?
I'd like to apologize to the listeners. Yeah, that was tough.
And me now, too.
JD, we'll get to you. That was tough for the listeners to hear about
you're
the whispering.
Dead.
And listen, we're lucky that Sammy projects. He has a strong voice. You could still pick up some of that.
Way too loud.
And that last sentence that he had on air was incredible. I will say so myself. JD, I'd love to like to...
What was his last sentence on air?
It was about Victor Hovland, and it made it to air. I don't know why. I didn't change anything. Sometimes I hate the board. JD, I'd also like to apologize to you.
Oh, it's the board's fault. See, this is a bad apology.
No, JD, that's not what I said.
This is a bad apology. No,
this is off the rails, folks.
Oh, sometimes I hate the board. Oh, the board magically stood up and walked all on its own out of the studio and put Sam's mic up at the right time.
Well, just wait till I get on Josh Santos, okay?
Oh, let me just tell you something.
Please.
I noticed you and Daniele having a lot of chuckles back there during yesterday's podcast only portion.
Is it not?
No, he's gone today.
Oh, he's gone today.
I saw a lot of, oh, we're having the greatest time. What were you two chuckling about? What was so important that you let me and the listeners down?
It was a lot of Rudy Gobert jokes.
Oh, yeah,
and,
wow. No, I'm sure they were
I was going off on the French people, and Daniele was here and receptive for it, so. Yeah.
I will say you
don't like my jokes. I will say that. So I do
like
need an
jokes.
Audience once in a while to have them.
Austin, your jokes are the lifeblood of the show.
I like your jokes when they're off the cuff.
Fair.
When you're basically Austin is a comic that can do crowd work, but his material is horrific.
His type five.
His type five is not meant for consumption.
It's more of a 1.5.
If you put him up to do a little crowd work, he can get that done. So you'd be like a good warm up. You know, like that's
a good opener.
Yeah. What was that show on HBO where he used to warm up
crashing.
For a, yeah, crashing. Yeah, exactly.
Crashing
Pete Holmes,
Pete
baby.
Holmes, yeah.
I'd take that lane.
Yeah. The mic.
You could not look
time.
More different than Pete Holmes.
Yeah, I'm good looking. I'll go on the penalty box now.
Okay. Oh, my goodness.
So, yeah, these mistakes will not be made moving forward on the podcast only portion as it is the podcast only portion. It's pretty critical. We have... That's the mics.
I'd just like to apologize once again to all listeners.
Yeah,
thank you for bearing with us.
Thank you to the listeners. Thank you for listening here right now. And yeah, if you really want to stick it to Austin, you'll go leave 5 stars and say, this podcast doesn't need you to be 5 stars, Austin.
That'll
doesn't
show me, guys. That
job.
Will show me.
Doesn't even need you to do your job for you to do that. Anyways, yeah, I gave out my Betano best bet. That sucker did hit. I had a money day yesterday, so I'm probably going to get... absolutely killed today. But yeah, if you've never tried Betano, reach out at JD Bunkus on either one. We'll get her going. So you guys, I think I saw Blake tweet this yesterday about the Raptors, but you guys reminded me of it today. So they're setting up full Jurassic Park.
Yeah. So,
but they're calling it the Raptors tailgate, which I think maybe they've done before.
Yeah, I think they have. But this is, I mean, yeah, this is so wild to me. I hadn't even thought of it, but yeah, they're outside of Scotiabank. There's Jurassic Park. It's going to be but like, what a weird season to do this. Like, the vibes of the team are terrible.
Oof.
I don't even know if anyone wants them to win, really. Like, what's your take on this? What type of maniac would go and watch a Raptors play-in game at Jurassic Park? I mean, ooh.
So there's a couple things here. My initial reaction was very much like yours. My initial reaction was, what are they doing? And then I go, of course they're doing this. It's an opportunity for them to bring people into the grounds,
yeah,
and have it look good on television. It's a nice product for them, right? There's basically two sports shots we have in the city. The city skyline from the perspective of Toronto Island.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the jib shot over the crowd.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are our two shots. So you're telling the producers of the show we're not going to do that? Here's the thing. Raptors fans are diehards.
Mm-hmm.
And hockey's so different because you really do, everybody has a chance every single game. And this is we're getting used to the playing in basketball. So this is kind of an awkward one where it's not a playoff series. But if the Raptors are the 8 seed, no one would even be questioning this.
That's right.
Like, and so I view this as just an extension of the 8 seed. This is the playoffs. They're doing this for a playoff game. It's going to be nationally televised here and in the States. To me, it actually makes more sense. It just feels weird because right now everybody's pretty pissed off about the state of the Raptors. Like,
yeah,
there is just
the discourse around the Raptors this year has been so weird.
Have you seen Scottie Barnes' stats the last 5 games, like in April?
Yeah.
He's averaging less than 10 points a game. His numbers are through the floor. He's been horrific. And it's just been largely unnoticed because they've been in some blowout games. Then there's this weird thing that people are doing, and thank God we have Blake Murphy. You know, hey, shout out to Blake Murphy, who's out here working overtime on Twitter, correcting all these Raptors blogs and people that are going, the Raptors actually point differential is a pace of a 46 win. And it's like, no, they were incredible at fake comebacks in a million games. And it totally changed the numbers of this team.
Yes.
As Blake put it, they're basically who their record says they are. Okay.
Yes.
There's no wild deviation here. And I think there's only a small section of people that are trying to do that. And I'll admit that I've been doing that sometimes because there are games where you watch the Raptors and they're clicking and they're humming and you go, damn, Siakam, Van Vliet, OG, Scotty,
yep,
Poeltl, a coach who's got a championship under his belt, Gary Trent Jr., Precious Achiuwa. Like, you say those names individually and you keep going, I can kind of talk myself into that team being a really tough out and a tough team and a good team. When we've seen them at their best, which has been very infrequent, they have looked dominant at times. And especially in this year's NBA where there's so many watered-down crap teams out west and that there's so much mediocre in the middle, in the east, that the Raptors don't feel that bad because everybody sucks.
Yeah.
But weirdly, like, it's their future. It's their next steps that are far different than a lot of these other teams.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's their flexibility to make either moves or what their top-tier talent actually is. The big thing is actually, Scotty, is that whatever, his next season is going to be a big one for him in terms of what the development's going to look like, how he goes through this offseason. And yeah, he's still very, very young. We won't know more about Scottie Barnes until, you know, his age 24, 25, 26 seasons. But this was a wildly disappointing year for him, like wildly. Yeah. And if we were talking about, hey, the timeline conversation, that's what got muddied here is you go, well, you're not good enough right now. And your players right now don't have a high enough ceiling, but your young guy that you were supposed to build the franchise around that you wouldn't trade for Kevin Durant a few months ago can't score 10 points in the final 5 games of the season. And it literally, go look at his numbers across the board this year. They're down everywhere. Yeah. His efficiency, horrific. Yeah. It's in shooting, all of it. It's just, it has not been very good. And that all coincides with, I've said it before, I'm not afraid to say it again, he's had a bad attitude this season on the floor. His composure at times has been brutal. And he has comported himself like he is a 10-year NBA superstar with the referees.
100%.
And that is not him. And when Scottie Barnes first came here, it was, this guy's the positive vibes guy, the energy guy, and he's a competitor. And I know that can get the best of you when you are a competitor. So I don't want to be overly critical for this stuff because I think that is all right.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a few times this year especially where I thought, man, Scotty, just focus on you. Like, yeah. Focus on your game. Focus on the team.
Well, there was that story that came out this year, too. I can't remember who it was by that kind of intimated that some of his teammates had picked up on. He kind of had this prima donna thing coming into the year. And like
there was a little bit of buzz about that.
You saw it in games. Like you nailed it. He carried himself at times like he was some sort of.
He did it in one of the games that you superstar. Went to. He like walked off the court because he was mad at a call and like walked down the tunnel and then came all the way back. I was like, what's going on?
Yeah, I'm at the point where I don't really care about this game. And I think a lot of people don't really care about this game because we already know, like the conversation I had with Alex Wong yesterday, that everything is pretty much settled.
Yeah.
Like I heard Will Liu say yesterday that it's all gravy except for it's just gravy. There's no meal. And I was like, that was a good analogy, man, because like
it's just gravy.
Something, but it's not, it's just something, but it's nothing.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
This is something, but it's nothing. It's a weird position for this team to be in because normally you could talk yourself into things like, you know, the young baby Blue Jays playing the Rays. And you go, no, these games will have some, these will matter and they'll probably help them out. Yeah. You want to have that experience. We don't know what the team's going to look like next year. We don't know what the coach is going to be like next year. And the way that Scotty Barnes' season has gone, the idea that him playing one crap game against the Chicago Bulls, who are equally not as talented, is going to have some kind of material impact on his career.
The Bulls are like in the same position the Raptors are. It's just like
everybody relax. I'm just saying, can we not pretend like this is what's going to matter? The 82 games that Scotty Barnes played this year, or like he didn't play 82, but the regular season that was there was far more important than the one Bulls game or the potential Hawks game that they might get to play here, right? Yeah. At most, they've got 9 games to play left. And that's not going to happen.
And that's very generous.
Yeah, that's generous.
That's what I'm saying.
It's probably more like between 2 and 6.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is you're not going to Jurassic Park.
No. But here's the thing. This is why I don't fault people for going. It's supposed to be beautiful outside.
That's a big thing. For the 20s. I brought the weather from Portugal with me.
You're going to have a cool downtown environment of the Blue Jays fans and the Raptors fans mixing together. And so if you're a Blue Jays fan and you figure, you know what, I'm actually going to leave the game or something, or I'm going to go here for a little bit, and you mix kind of the both. That's not a bad thing. That's a cool kind of vibe to be around in the downtown core at times. And you do the Super Sports Day thing. That's not bad. And then also, sports isn't always about winning. Like, it's about being in a community of your fans and suffering through it together. And I think there's probably a little bit of that. If you're a younger guy, if you're Jobo's age, especially, and you've got the body to stand for hours and watch television...
That your knees
you
just
I usually sit for hours.
You and your friends, you're thinking, let's watch this game together. Then, maybe you just go. Your experience has been, we've gone to Jurassic Park year over year, so let's go down to this game and be together. So
important
cool
to remember, too, like when Jurassic Park is bumping, it's cool.
Oh, it's the best. But the thing is when it's been bumping is like...
Games that matter.
Yeah. We're used to it being for a championship run now. So going for this and saying... Game. Yeah. Going from playing for what to, we beat the Chicago Bulls.
People jumping
up and down, losing their minds, isn't going to feel quite. That's the part of it that feels weird, is when they cut to that shot number two after the skyline.
After like a 9-1 run.
Yeah, and you see the 9-1 run outside. And the fans are losing their damn minds for it. There's going to be a part of all of us that goes, shut up.
We get to play Atlanta.
Anyways,
speaking of Atlanta, really quick, the play-in tournament does start tonight. Yeah. So who you got between Hawks, Heat, and T-Wolves, Lakers?
I was looking at Betano. I kind of think that 7.5 is too many points for the T-Wolves facing the Lakers. And I don't know how much of an impact Rudy Gobert is going to... Did you guys hear actually the Kyle Anderson leaked audio? Do you have it?
1 second, I can get it.
Okay.
The mic clicks every time.
Oh, no. It was just more that he did this little, like, he didn't know where the button was move to talk.
he was doing, hovering his hand around
thing, and I'm like, what are you doing back there? What is going on?
Going down a certain je ne sais quoi to it.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, Kyle Anderson. You don't need to play it. You got it? All right, play it. Yeah, this was Kyle Anderson, apparently. Dude, this was from the locker room.
Yeah.
And you see it's on a... You just play it.
Kiss his ass way too much. Don't tell me, folks.
He says you kiss his ass way too much.
What's wrong with y'all?
Y'all got a decision to make this
song. No, he said, I got a decision to make. Like, right. I might have to get out of here. So what he's clearly implying is you guys are Rudy Gobert ass kissers, and apparently he was calling him the B word a bunch in front of him, and Rudy Gobert stuck up for himself. And then the Timberwolves suspended him for a game. And I'm kind of like, you should suspend somebody if they don't throw hands after getting called that multiple times by someone up close. Like, that is a you have to respond move, essentially. All of this seems really ugly and really hectic.
Yeah.
And 7.5 seemed like a lot, but I couldn't back it when I heard that audio because I went, oh, these guys aren't like all together against Rudy.
Yeah.
These guys aren't like, we'll show him.
Yeah.
It's very clear that that's a divided room on this. And yes. The fact that someone on the team, like, it was one thing when the Draymond video leaked.
It was like a security camera.
Because,
in the gym.
There was just a lot of different people that could have had their hands in that.
Yeah.
This is the locker room
after. Yeah, leaking that is weird.
That's on a phone.
Yeah, that's so weird.
No, somebody, the optics of it are bad.
Like, could you imagine what it's going to be like around those bros when Kyle Anderson saw that come out and someone sent that to him going, yo, one of your teammates potentially recorded you
or like a staff member
down.
Someone that you trust
recorded this. Here's the thing. I don't think it was a staff member. Because if you're a staff member,
I'm just saying it could have been.
No. James. But here's the thing. Sure.
Yeah.
But hear me out on this, because I've tried to play detective on this a little bit. If you're a staff member and you got busted doing that, your career is over.
Career. You're never getting another.
You're never doing anything again. It's way too much risk for the reward of a staffer.
Yeah, fair.
But if you're a player, you don't want to get busted, obviously, but you just have a different level of being emboldened in that situation where you go like, oh, it was an accident, and then I sent it to somebody, and they leaked
another
it.
Team will take a flyer on you or something like that. You'll go end up
well, you won't
else.
Even, I don't even think necessarily get moved. I'm just saying that that's the move of a player, taking out your phone in that situation. A staffer taking out his phone and then burying it in a bag or wherever the hell that thing went to record it.
Like in his backpack?
I don't know. I'm just saying that. I think the Lakers are definitely going to win that game. I'd be shocked if the T-Wolves found a way to do it. But 7.5 was a little bit too much for me to feel comfortable about betting-wise. And then the other game is, if you bet that game, you're out of your mind. Like, you need help. You got to seek help. You got to go to therapy immediately because there's just nothing, like,
does that game matter at all?
Oh, even from an aesthetic standpoint,
it's gross.
Yuck.
It's gross.
There's nothing about this that I can get behind. I cannot stand watching Trae Young play basketball.
Awful.
I like Jimmy Butler, but I've seen enough.
Yeah.
I've had enough Jimmy Butler moments at this point in my career that I'm not desperate to see it. I will say that I do want Miami to win so that they can face Boston and the first round is another rematch between
those
guys.
That's infinitely more interesting than
Oh my God. Atlanta in the playoffs.
Who cares?
Four games against Boston.
Oh my goodness. That,
four.
They might end that in three, to be honest.
No, yeah, exactly.
Like, you might
mercy
get past
rule.
Game three no, and be like, rule. You know what?
No, I want a more interesting first round, so I want the Celtics to face the Heat. So I'll be kind of rooting for the Heat. I don't know. Kyle Lowry versus Marcus Smart again. Two guys on down seasons. Two of
flops
the worst
everywhere.
Floppers who ever flopped. Anyway,
the
I just...
The flop battle.
Yeah.
The flop derby.
I'll tune into those games tonight, probably more of the Minnesota game because I'll be watching Blue Jays and Leafs. I forgot. And also definitely I'll be watching.
You're going to watch
so locked in on the
Owen
Leafs.
Sound Attack goalie.
Yeah,
that?
I will be so locked in on the Leafs.
It's the biggest game of the regular season.
I will not miss Tampa Bay.
They should just make this game one.
God.
Just make it game one.
I'm so mad. I know.
Just make it game one, please.
Anyway, what's next?
So I saw this article about a survey yesterday from New Zealand. So the University of Waikato, they showed
you should have Googled that first.
I did.
Yeah?
I did. That's apparently how you pronounce it.
I have the thing open.
I have the thing open.
I believe you.
I'm
not even going to look.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they did a survey on 780 people, and 25% of them said that they were confident they could land a plane.
Yeah.
With a non-instructional video. So just a video of a pilot landing a plane.
Yeah.
25% of those 780 said, yeah, I'm confident I could do that. That's insane. An insane take. Say you could land a plane.
What's the question?
The question is, like, what's something that would seem easy like that, but would be incredibly difficult, and some people kind of underrate it?
Okay. Recording Sam McKee when he comes in for the podcast.
Good one. See?
Nah, that was well-timed. Well-timed.
Crowd work.
Yeah.
Okay. So first of all, everybody thinks what they do is harder than it is, right?
Fair. Yeah.
Everybody does. Yeah. And there's nothing more infuriating than when someone thinks they can do your job. And that's why that pilot when they went, 25% of people could do it. Was it a guy or was it a girl?
The retired Air New Zealand pilot said the video was 100% useless for training purposes.
But do we know? Yeah, anyway, the person.
Yes, it didn't specify.
The pilot.
It didn't specify, yeah.
Was, when they came in that room, they were like, here is the list of percentages. He or she was like, what are you talking about? So much. That video was useless. It's like, well, then why did they make it? That would be my counter as someone who would be like, I think I could get down. I have flown real flight simulators before, and I've also fake flown a plane.
Mm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Like, yes, I have fake flown a plane like a kid being on their daddy's lap.
Okay.
No, but I mean, not quite like that. Like, I've actually, taken the reins, flown the plane.
Right, gotcha.
Was on a flight simulator. My uncle had a plane for a very long time. He got very into being a pilot.
Nice.
And he had a real flight simulator because he's a surgeon who had it outside of his office so that he could practice, because you could actually get flight log time using the real simulators. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
So I would sit on that and I'd wait outside of his office and I would practice and sit on it and do it and whatever.
That's pretty cool.
No, but so I took off once.
Mm.
Cool. Never landed, obviously. But one time he joked with me about landing, and it was the most scared feeling, because he was that kind of guy where, like, he would, he's a thrill seeker. Like, he likes motorcycles and planes, and anyway.
Right.
He was very much like, I could have seen it. Where, like, he was
high,
like,
octane.
He was asking me, like, he was sussing it out, where he was like, do you feel confident to do it? And I was like, no. He's like, don't you want to do it? And I was like, absolutely not. And he wouldn't have actually let me do it. But yeah, I just, landing the plane.
Yeah.
Insanely difficult.
Yes. Yeah.
Insanely difficult. That being said, that pilot.
The retired Air New Zealand pilot. Just,
man. Okay. This is the only way I can equate this to my job. Everybody looks at what I can do and they say, I could talk about sports for a living. I could totally do this. It's like, you could. You could sit down in this chair for an hour, 2 hours, time would pass, and the show would end.
And you could talk.
But you wouldn't have, like, landed the plane successfully. Like, you could land the plane, but everybody's dead.
Yeah, that doesn't mean you walk,
like,
out
you
of the
plane. You could land my plane and crash it into the ground,
be
essentially.
A flaming wreckage.
And have the lowest rated podcast ever. Man, it's so funny. I tell this to people all the time. So this is just a defense of my job in terms of people saying it's so easy or whatever. Whenever people ask me for career advice that want to be doing this, I always tell them, you need to log hours. You need to log hours. And guess what? That's like every good profession, every meaningful profession. Unless you are, and even if you're doing, like, what job do you have to do that doesn't require a lot of training, right? Like,
yeah,
it's reps.
Great.
It's like anything, any job, you got to do reps. So anytime someone thinks they know it all and they step in and right away think they're going to be great at it, it's infuriating for everyone that actually knows how much time goes into it.
Yep.
Like, truly, it's nuts.
Yep.
Looking at old behind the glass back there when we first started producing, he's like, I know. I was like, I'll kill you. Like, do not tell me that you know everything. Like, that's the thing, is you have to be humble when you start something else new. But for this show in particular, and for doing this job in particular, if you ever listen to your friend's podcast or two people that are trying to start a podcast and they say, hey, will you listen to this? And they send it over to me. I go, do not send this. I'm Kamala Harris game.
I'm going to send you so many podcasts tonight.
No, I'm telling you, it is a nightmare for you. What you need to do is practice. And then if you ever want to send me a podcast demo or something like that,
mm-hmm.
have it be after thousands of hours.
Yeah.
Have it be after so much time. I would say bare minimum 500 hours for you to be doing on a podcast before you even start to, like, hey, check this out.
Mm.
You suck at podcasting. Like, you could not podcast right now if you have not done it for a very long time. I'm sorry. It's just a fact.
Yeah.
It's way harder than you think. It takes an immeasurable amount of time. And
a lot of preparation.
Yeah, you have to prepare. You have to. I still think I suck at this. Like, compared to great podcasts and radio hosts that I listen to sometimes, I get down in the dumps.
I remember you telling me that. Like, sometimes you can't listen to other guys because you get.
I hear some people and I go, this is incredible. And I'm not, I shouldn't be comparing myself to certain people.
I was about to say, like, comparing yourself is the worst thing you can do.
No, but, and again, this is a gap in hours and talent and many different things, but.
You know, let's say 10,000 hours to master.
Listening to Howard Stern interview someone And then if I had to listen, if I had to listen to a Howard Stern interview and then me do it right after, there's no telling what I would do next. If someone told me, hey, you're trapped in a room, you have to listen to how good Howard Stern is at getting just incredible information out of people, and now you have to listen to your cringy ass stumble through your questions still because you think you're trying to be conversational, and then you're asking the question, then talking more after. God.
You'd subject yourself to the bobblehead line. You'd put yourself
in it. I would genuinely, That'd be the same thing, basically, as someone with a gun to my head. Like, they're in full control of me. They go, I'll press this button. If I had an episode of Saw or a torture movie, that's what that would be.
Oh.
Is me back-to-back with radio and podcast greats. Howard Stern, then you.
Want to play a game, and it's just a Howard Stern clip.
Yes, exactly.
Could you imagine?
Roman Mars, then you.
Could you imagine? JD sitting in the chair like, no!
So anyway, everybody thinks their job is harder than it is, and that's what I would say is whenever you speak to anybody that is a professional at something, that be respectful. I think we live in a culture now where a lot of people think that they can do or know more than they do because we have so much more information at our disposal, right? Mm-hmm. I listen to a million podcasts on architecture, like on design, on biology.
Brazilian soccer jerseys.
Yeah,
which you sent me.
I read a lot, you know, and it's good to be informed, but I think a lot of people confuse being informed with actual knowledge, and that's a very big gap.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. We have an expert culture. People are foodies. They're restaurant critics because they leave a little...
a review here and there.
And by the way, though, you are a podcast professional reviewer if you leave 5 stars on this podcast. That's how you get your wings.
Only 5.
That's how you get your wings here. Anyway, so
5 stars.
Be respectful when you go into people's stuff. But yeah, in terms of jobs that I think you think are easier than they are.
Yeah.
Trying to think of who can I disrespect?
Someone's getting disrespected.
Here's the thing. It's absolutely not a trade. Dead last for me would be trades. Like, I would never step in and be like, what's that, a saw? Yeah, I got this. No. We got to lay some bricks down. How hard could this be? I've seen cartoons.
Surely wiring a house can't be that bad.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. What is a job?
The first thing that came to my head was deep sea diving. I don't know why, but that was the first thing that came to my head.
First of all, that's a job to you that you thought of? You're such a child.
I know I am.
You're like, no, what's a job?
Astronaut.
He's like, you know, it'll be nice.
Well,
prince is an easier job. I want to be my prince in a castle.
I did not write job. I said something.
Yeah.
Look, it's
I'm a prince.
You,
it's in the dark.
If you go deep sea diving, you come up too early. Can't you die?
Yeah, you can. Yes. No, this
wouldn't that be really
that's
like...
what I'm saying. Some people think it's easy just because you're swimming around, but it's way harder than that.
This is the worst answer on the show.
That's a crap. I've
never heard.
Okay. Sorry, guys. I'm a child.
Yeah, that was a very child answer.
Damn it.
Oof.
Can I give one?
Yeah, of course.
PR. Just got to tell me when the guy's coming on the show.
I know. Yeah,
and
I agree.
Organize it. Come on, people.
We really shouldn't be taking shots at PR given
that's
our
okay.
position.
They won't make it this far.
But yeah, I agree. I would also say that if I could do anything, I know I could step into right away. Consultant.
Consultant.
Just about any industry. I can 100%. Whoops. We got to cut that. I could do that though.
10:27 and 1 second.
I could do that.
10:27.
I could absolutely fake my way through so many things in terms of what we need to do. Like, give me the groundwork, like, give me the background. And I think I'll be able to at least fake my way through being like, here's what I think we need to do here. Obviously, some industry would be way too out of my purview.
Yeah.
But if you told me I could be a media consultant tomorrow, I think I'd be genuinely one of the best who ever lived.
Wow.
Yeah.
Media consultants are listening to that.
I don't think there's any job I could do other than my current job. I'm one of those guys. I don't think I have any transferable skills to anything.
Hmm.
So, sorry to be a downer.
I agree. No, that's so depressing.
That was terrible.
Simon, hey, look, we're paying you less. Don't do that.
Just put yourself in a box.
Simon is next raise. I don't think I could do anything
other
than this.
Just keep me where I'm at. I'm useless.
Yeah,
I mean,
I'll take a pay cut, guys.
Whatsoever. All right, what's next?
So the Orioles are using like a home run beer bong to celebrate.
I hate it.
Their homers. Here's the thing also. They said, Kyle Gibson said, we want to make sure that it's rebranded. It's a Homer hose and not a dong bong.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't a dong bong before you said dong bong, and now it's dong bong.
Well, that's
forever.
The name.
Everyone's
that's taken
only
going
to call it that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. This is a rule in life. He knew what he was doing. He had to, because he's been in too many clubhouses. He's been around bros for too long, and you know the rule of being around the fellas is, if you don't want to be called something, don't ever be mad about it. The second you're triggered about something, or the second you say, don't call me that, or
it's
don't
just
say that,
you're wearing that
that's
forever.
Who you are from now on. That's yes. a
Until
rule.
You're dead.
Yes, 100%. Until you die, and then even at your funeral, they're going to be like, old dong bong.
Just like tearful, tears
yeah,
in your
exactly.
eyes.
you like get up out of it, like, what?
Your best hope is that they shorten it to DB. That's your best hope.
Yeah.
And like, you hope that no one asks what that stands for.
Yeah, I have a buddy whose nickname is RK. It's short for Rat King. And he got mad being called Rat King once.
And he just wore it forever.
He's genuinely so RK that everybody in university thought his name was like his real initials. When they found out that his initials were SC, they were like, what's happening here? How's this?
Who's this guy?
Yeah, he's RK. He's the Rat King. And he's been the Rat King he's in my phone as Rat King. He'll be Rat King till the day he dies. I will always call him Rat. There's nothing, and he's got like a respectable job, and he is the Rat King. And he will always be the Rat King. And he knows it, and everybody knows it. And the best people he'll ever get is people calling him Arkeezy or RK.
Arkeezy. See, Arkeezy,
that's all he'll ever get. Is he's a Rat King.
That's so true, though. If you get mad at a nickname or like a brand of any kind, like you're going to wear it forever.
You're
cooked.
You're done. So with this, I think it's. I saw people going, this is so cool. And it's not cool. It's super lame.
I agree.
It's a really lame home run celebration. It's good kind of in theory, right? Because if you did make someone chug a beer after they hit a home run, that would be pretty cool. But you have to drink some water.
Like Powerade or something.
Funnel. Yeah, I'm like, all right.
If you introduce this in like your softball league or whatever,
that would
be awesome.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. But there's something about it where you go, no. The cool part about a beer bong is not you drinking from it. It's that you drink beer fast.
Yeah.
So anyways, it's super lame. And I know probably people would be like, oh, you're Buzzkill, Killjoy. It's super fun. And I was like, I don't think it is.
You missed the home run jacket at all?
Not in the slightest. I'm not an uncle in the sense of I was getting all triggered about it. My favorite thing was being at Jays games last year, and people, whenever they do it, you'd always have like the old guy that came in from somewhere. It's like, I can't believe so mature they do this. Every time they make an error, it's like, home run jacket.
It was a jacket. This is how you know they won't win the World Series. That jacket.
And I did think that Vladdy putting on the Phantom jacket the other night was pretty interesting. Like, he's still keeping it
keep the tradition alive.
Yeah, he still wants it.
What did you think of the Angels samurai helmet? Do you see that one?
Here's the thing, man. I think it's a long season.
Yeah.
And so those guys having fun with that stuff, it has no bearing on anything. That's why the home run jacket take was so stupid. When people were like, the home run jacket, get rid of the home run jacket. I'm like, every team does this stuff. Do you get mad about the fire helmet that guys keep in NHL dressing rooms, right? Mm-hmm. Like the championship belts. Yeah, turnover chain.
Sacramento
like
Kings chain.
No, anybody who got mad at the home run jacket, I'm sorry. Like, if you were genuinely mad about it, you're kind of dumb.
Yeah.
You're kind of stupid.
It's just such a weird thing to get mad about.
Yeah, like, I know. You're kind of stupid, and it's okay. It's okay, because not everybody's smart. I'm not smart. I'm just not as stupid as you for getting mad about that. Like, I'm not. So, yeah, you can't be a sports fan and just pick and choose which ones are, you know, making you so angry. What's that face back there, stupid Mackie? He's just getting mad.
I got like a weird thing going on my leg where it just kind of loses blood flow. So I got to stand up, get her going. You know, I didn't think you wanted to know, but you asked.
You're a freak.
You asked.
I asked because you're just hobbling around back there.
Yeah, you look at me more than you look at your
co-host with
all
one
show,
leg
okay?
blood flow back here. Like, God. Anyway, one more. Let's do one more and let's get out of here.
Go ahead.
A Florida middle school teacher has been accused of running a fight club in class.
Sick. we had a fight club in the Yukon when I was a kid.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, at your school?
No, it was at skate park.
Oh. And we did it at school. Kids Wrestling Federation.
Yours sounds so much more innocent, Maggie.
Yeah, it got up.
That's so awesome.
Kids Wrestling Federation.
So how old were you, like, during the Wrestling Federation and during the Fight Club?
I was younger during Fight Club, and it was mostly older kids, mostly older toughs that were a year or two older than me.
And you're talking about what, like 13, 14?
Yeah, around that range.
Because, man, that age of like early teenage boy,
yeah,
there is no one more willing to like get in a fight over nothing.
That's what I'm saying. And, yeah, and that was it, is you'd go to the skate park and then essentially Fight Club was a couple of guys would agree who was a level of tough. And then you would fight at the skate park. And then, yeah, a couple kids got like their asses really beat, like for real beat. And it was scary. Fight Club was spooky. I was spooked out. I would always be, I only went to Fight Club one time. So, okay. But I went to Fight Club one time and I was younger. And I remember hanging out at Fight Club and I was watching it. And the whole time, all I could think was, please don't make me do Fight Club.
Don't get me up there, please.
Like, please. Because it was random. Dude, people would just challenge. Like, they'd be
right,
like,
well,
I'll
you're not
going to
say no.
They would
just
step out of the crowd. I'll fight you at Fight Club. And I was just sitting there probably pale as a ghost, skinny as hell, 13. Just boy body. All
like watching people
not
just
an
get
ounce of puberty in me at 13. Rocked. Like, not even one hormone had gotten in. Like, you know, like, not one. It was all just
young JD
nothing going on. And I was standing there terrified, watching dudes beat the crap out of each other. And me, and these are like the toughest older guys, too. And you know when you're that age, too, like, the town toughs, the local your time toughs.
Oh yeah,
those are the most. That's like Mike Tyson to you.
Yeah,
you know,
oh, yeah.
That,
yeah.
Like, there's guys who I still remember, like this guy Blair. He and Mike Tyson in my mind are the exact same thing. Like, I watched this one kid Blair lay people out multiple times. Like, he was just like the kind of big, strong, fattish kid, you know,
yeah,
that
yeah.
was,
yes.
But also knew how to fight, and you could hit him 100 times in the head and he wouldn't slow
he
down.
He wouldn't even feel it.
Yeah. And he was just that kid, and he would, and he was like the, I love this guy.
It's terrifying.
You know, he was the kid where something happened. Something happened. And so
he had that power too then, right? You could just
dude,
lay
power.
Somebody out.
He was a monster.
Terrified.
He was an absolute monster. And he was like 2 years older than me. And I swear, I've seen that guy win at least 10 fights. And all of them were like,
he's 10 and 0,
not close, you know? Yeah.
10
knockouts. I was actually at one place with him, one party where, again, bros. And this was older. This was like when I was 17 with this guy. And it was like everyone was putting on the boxing gloves. I did fight that night. This is when I had a few fights under my belt. I never really fought before then. I got in a few got a few scraps.
Tussles.
A few
tussles.
Got a couple of scraps as I was starting to get a little bit older. But there was one time where we were just hanging out. This is a bro party and dudes put gloves on. Same. It was basically Fight Club again because it was all just dudes matching up and boxing. But this time it was boxing gloves, which made it seem better. And I just watched this guy, Blair, fight a guy who had false confidence that the gloves would help him out. And it's one of the most hard knockouts I've ever seen. Because I think this guy thought like, oh, haha, like I'll go up a weight class essentially. Like he's a tough guy too. And he thought like, yeah, whatever. We got the gloves. He had a little too much confidence. And it was like, yep, lights out, like crooked. Like,
well, you're fighting Blair
like
Bones
Jones
up there.
Yeah, fully unconscious. So, yeah. What was the point of this again? Fight Club?
Well, teacher.
I'm just deep now in my memories, my UConn memories.
I was just hoping to get in some fight talk. I mean, have you been in any fights as an adult?
Kind of, yeah.
Obviously, Simon.
Yeah, I have been in it.
You talked to JD
embarrassing,
before?
embarrassingly so, I have been in a couple of fights. I haven't been in a fist fight as an adult since my mid-20s, though. So
that was my last one, yeah.
Yeah. So I have not fought ever since, and I almost fought another time and did not.
Good.
Was thankful that I didn't. But yeah, I used to have temper, and as a guy who's not big but did grow up in a place where fighting was so encouraged, otherwise you were like such a coward. That's why I was afraid at Fight Club when I was a little kid, is that it was like you had to fight.
Yeah.
If somebody called you out and someone talked trash, if you didn't fight back,
it's like rite of passage almost.
You were never going to recover from that reputation. Like it was going to take forever. You were afraid. The only thing that could be worse than being beat up was being afraid. And so that is one of the, I think, darker things about growing up in a remote place like that.
It's almost like you'd rather get beat up at that point than be afraid.
Yeah, being tough matters way more. And I know that's other places too, right? Like that comes in different ways in different areas. But yeah, for sure there, that was a big thing. Was fight culture was big. Like pretty much, I can't remember going to too many parties where there wasn't a fight growing up. Like really can't remember, like, unless they were like, parties where it was, you know, those, you know, it was the best parties, like grade 7, grade 8, when it was just you and your bros and pops.
Yeah.
And candy.
Chips.
And then, like, the first getting into weed times where you'd be like, we're going to smoke this weed and then we're going to hang out in the basement, just the dudes. And we're just going to eat candy.
And eat chips and drink Coke.
Yeah. And then you'd always have a couple of cool friends that started to break away from the pack. And they would start to hang out with the older kids and they would start to go, like, party and drinks. And you'd be like, no, man, don't do it.
Don't you remember the good times?
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, you were at those same parties. You were shaking at the skate park, being like, "God, this is what I everybody told me I want is to be here." they said this was cool.
This
sucks. I'd way rather be watching movies in the basement. We were down there. We were living like kings, watching Chris Farley movies, eating fuzzy peaches, and now we're out here at the skate park in the cold, wearing a ripped up hoodie, hoping my
we're
jeans
going
are cool
backwards,
enough.
Fellas.
Some other local tough doesn't beat my face in. Oh, what are we doing? What are we doing? Maybe the Pete's of the world, the Safe Space kids have it right. Maybe you guys got it right, because that sucked. I hated that. Anyway, leave 5 stars on podcast.
This is a crazy end of the show.
I go deal with all my trauma. I unlocked, dude, I was like staring forward like an old fighter pilot during some of this, thinking about different guys I watched get beat down. Like, for me, I've been beat down too. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. That was a dark one. Maybe someday it was a Tales from the Yukon. We'll have to do that later. The
Kids Wrestling Federation is a lot more innocent. We just had kids winning titles.
Yeah, buddy. Kids
we
in
had
the
stories
title.
Going up.
Kids
on.
In the titles. Kids, insane.
Kids Green 3 and 4. Really?
Kids Wrestling Federation was definitely spelled kids with a Z.
Yeah.
No, because we weren't that smart. Grade 3 and 4.
Austin, were you undefeated by chance?
No. I may or may not have gone over, like the Iron Sheik in Toronto in the 1970s, 6-year undefeated run.
Oh, that's incredible. So it sounds like this was just you and your younger brother, kids wrestling.
He was just beating up grade 1s.
Yeah, he's just
showing
up.
Shout out Andrew Gunn. He knows what I'm talking about. Grade 3 behind 7th Street Public School playground. Kids got after
kids
it.
Kids wrestling.
You say
until
Andrew
kid
Gunn?
Busted his head open, and then we got into a lot of trouble. Should have been expelled, but that's another story.
Well, it wasn't really another story. It was the whole story.
That was the story.
We got the Coles notes.
It's
all right.
Really not that much more fun.
Leave 5 stars, and if you're going to the home opener, have fun. Good hour tomorrow. I'll break it down. See you then.